Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
You're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, you can stream our show live weekdays at 9 and 11 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Good morning, I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News. This hour, sure, more women are running for office in 2018, but we've seen this movie before. Is this wave of women plunging into electoral politics transformational? Emily's List President Stephanie Chirac told NPR recently, we've never seen anything like this. And indeed, women here in Minnesota are running for governor, U.S. Senate, and Congress. But I was a television reporter covering politics during the Year of the Woman after Anita Hill. And while more women ran for office and won, they still ended up being just a small percentage of the overall public office holders in the country. Most governors are men. A large majority of members of Congress are men. So our question, is this time different? Is it sustainable? Is it more about President Trump than anything else? As our guests join us, I want to hear from you. If you're a woman in your 20s and beyond, are you thinking about running for office? What has held you back? And for all of us, does this year feel different somehow in electing women? I want to hear from you if you're in your 20s or 30s because you're just getting into your career years. You're balancing everything else, right? Family and all the other things. But does public office occupy, I guess, a key priority in your future plans? I want to know about that this morning. 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828. And then for all of us, does this year feel different somehow in electing women? Give some thought to that. Tell me why. On Twitter, at CarrieNPR. Jennifer Lawless is with us. She's director of the Women in Politics Center at American University, where she's also a professor of government, and she's with us from Washington. And Jennifer, welcome back to the show. Really good to talk to you again.
Thanks for having me again.
Later in the hour, by the way, we'll talk with a politician and an advocacy group for electing women. Jennifer, I want to do some numbers here. I looked at a graph that showed women candidates for Congress going back to the early 2000s. In 2004, the numbers of women running for the House were a bit over 100 from both parties. The Senate that year, under 20. 2018, around 430 women have filed or are close to filing for the House, 50 women for the Senate. What is this? What's going on in your view?
Well, there's no question that we've seen a record number. They're almost all running on the Democratic side of the aisle, which suggests that a lot of this energy, activism, and candidate emergence is a direct response to Donald Trump's victory and what he's done as president during these first 18 months.
We should note that women have come out in force to run for governor, too, including here in Minnesota. We have 31 Republican women running for governor, so it's not just Democrats, which brings me back to what you just said about the president. This seems to be inspiring women from the Republican Party, from the president's party as well, to run. So why would this only be the effect, the Trump effect?
Well, in some cases, it's inspiring Republican women to run, largely because there's so much attention around the Democratic wave that Republicans are probably recruiting women to try and mitigate some of that partisan gap. But when you look at the actual numbers and you look at the percentage of female candidates, especially at the congressional level, who are running on the Democratic side of the aisle, the lopsided ratios are still pretty compelling. So again, that's not to say that there aren't some Republicans who are either turned off by Donald Trump or who are being recruited by the Republican Party to extend Donald Trump's agenda, but it's largely Democratic women who are particularly annoyed and aggravated and upset by what they've seen.
So how different does this year, this version of the Year of the Woman 2018, look to you than it did in 1992?
Well, it's really an interesting question because the raw numbers are hard to even compare, right? We're seeing triple or even quadruple fold increases in the number of female candidates. The similarities are that, again, it's concentrated predominantly on the Democratic side of the aisle, and that a lot of the issues these women are thinking about as important to them are issues that were also on the forefront in 1992. Issues like sexual harassment, issues like health care, issues like paid family and medical leave. But one other thing that I would note is that this time around, the number of Democratic men running for office has reached a record high as well.
Oh.
So it's very likely that we're seeing a year of the Democrat first and a year of the woman second.
And what does that say to you?
So that is one of the biggest pieces of evidence, I think, for a Trump effect. It's not just women who feel like they need to get in there and do something to stop what they don't like in the Trump administration. It's progressives and Democrats in general who feel like this is a time to really take a stand.
You know, I think what I'm hearing on Twitter here from listeners really echoes this. A listener says it's not just Trump that's making women run. It's the coming of age of millennial women who have been shamed for standing up for their strong values. We don't feel represented and we don't see change happening. Jennifer, do you hear that as you look into the research and you listen to candidates about why they might be running?
I do, and I think what we're seeing are people that are beginning to think enough is enough. They might not be running this election cycle, but we know that what we've seen over the last 12 to 18 months is evidence of seeds being planted for future candidacies, whether in 2018, 2020, or 2022, or even further down the road. Young women who are beginning to think, wait a minute, if I don't get in there and do something, it's going to be business as usual, and sometimes we might even take a step back. The good news, I think, is that there are a lot of Democratic and progressive men who feel the same way and who are prioritizing the kinds of issues that matter to young women as well. So, you know, I think there's potential for a real generational shift.
We've got a couple of women candidates on the phone lines here, I'm happy to say, to Catherine in Andover. So, Catherine, tell me about yourself. Where are you running?
Hi. Yes. So my name is Catherine, and I live in Andover, Minnesota, and I'm running in 35B, which includes most of Andover, three precincts of Coon Rapids, and one precinct in Ramsey.
Why are you running?
So I'm running in large part because of my kids and my neighbors. You know, I am a mother, but I am also a neighbor. And this last election, I don't think what we heard in the media and, you know, in our newspapers, that it really is reflecting what I'm seeing in my community.
How so? Yeah, give me a specific.
So I have Republican friends that our kids play together. They're dear friends of mine. I also have Democratic friends. And, you know, this notion that how you vote defines everything about you is something that really troubles me. And I think we've gotten into that that mindset that if somebody voted for Trump, that they're inherently bad. And I just don't see that when I'm talking to my neighbors. And I don't think they appreciate being seen that way. I think we're all more complex than that. And I don't think our current political climate is leaving room for people to bring their full selves into these conversations.
And Catherine, I really hope you listen to our show tomorrow. We're doing a two-part show on political stereotyping, and it's exactly what you're talking about, kind of the demonization, right,
right,
of the different parties.
Right, and it affects our kids. You know, our kids go to school together, and what they hear around the dinner table, they bring into their classrooms. And I had a kindergartner during the election, and I was really surprised by the things he came home talking about that he was having conversations with his peers about. When I was in kindergarten, we weren't talking about that. And so I worry about what this political climate is doing for our communities, what it's doing to the neighborhoods we're bringing our kids up in. And that's my motivation for running.
Okay, really good to have the call. Glad you happen to be listening today. Yeah. Jennifer, what do you hear in that?
That's a very common sentiment. I think that men and women, but probably women in particular, are concerned about the lack of civility in our political institutions. Things are not that different now than they were before when we look at policy differences and preferences between Democrats and Republicans. What has really changed is the tone and the tenor of that debate. And we've gotten to the point where people are so turned off by the vitriolic ad hominem attacks that they hear on a regular basis that they either completely run away from the political arena or they're now beginning to say, wait a minute, maybe I've got to get in there so that I can bring a degree of civility or collegiality that seems to be lacking. I do think something that's really important to note, though, is that while there is some evidence to suggest that women would bring that civility and that sense of collegiality, mm-hmm. they're no more likely than men to be bipartisan.
Ah.
So that distinction is really, really important. There are very important benefits to electing women, and having a nice, normal, functioning workplace might very well be among them. But we shouldn't expect women to cross the party line, hold hands, and sing kumbaya any more than men would, because there are real differences that separate Democrats and Republicans.
So as these elected officials, women and men, express their differences, women may be less nasty about it, but they're still going to hold the line on their issues.
That's right. And that makes sense, given that they represent their constituents, and their constituents tend to come now from pretty polarized districts. But by polarized, I mean by policy. What we've seen in Washington is polarization also in terms of tone and tenor. And I think that that's what's rubbing people in a wrong way. And when Donald Trump takes to Twitter and when Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer respond in kind, it only reinforces what people think is wrong with Washington and
Absolutely.
The idea that we need some adults to be sent back there.
Call here from Ruth in St. Paul. Hi, Ruth. What's your story? Glad you called.
Thank you. So I am running for House of Representatives in District 52B, which is Invergrove Heights, Mendota Heights, Sunfish Lake, and a little bit of northern Eagan.
Mm-hmm.
I am an African-American woman of color who has received the endorsement in a suburban district, which I was very proud to receive. And my run for office has really been an extension of work that I've been doing for over a decade. And I think the bipartisan piece of the work is very critical because in order to get things done, what I found over the years policy-wise is you have to be able to work across aisles in order to get things done. And I think the polarization that we're seeing within this country is really holding us back. And so I'm really hoping that we can get a change in that sort of polarization that we're seeing.
Ruth, when you knock on doors and you encounter voters, what's the first mm-hmm. issue that they bring up to you? What are they most concerned about?
Well, you know, as we know, politics are very personal.
Mm-hmm.
And so with each person's unique perspective, I'm hearing really different things. So when I'm talking to my neighbors in law enforcement, they're really concerned about mental health issues and how things are going. When I'm talking to families and seniors, there's a lot of concerns about consumer protection. The rising cost of college is something that we're hearing quite a bit about as well. And really the big issue that I'm hearing most from my folks in my district are about gun reform and school safety.
Oh,
those are things that
okay.
are keeping people up at night.
I want to ask you just something. How old are you? Give me the range, if you'd rather not just say the specific number. And there's a reason why
I'm
asking.
Old enough to run for president.
Okay, all right. So you're over 40. I think you have to
yeah.
be. Okay. Thanks so much for the call, Ruth. I'm glad you heard the show, Jennifer. I asked that because earlier you said that you were hearing some seeds of, you know, future interest in running for office. Now, when you and I have spoken before, and I've done other shows on this, there is some frustration around the fact that women wait longer to feel qualified to run for public office than men do. Is that still the case or is that changing?
That's still the case. And I'm glad you asked this because I think it's important to put what we're seeing into a broader perspective. We've done surveys of potential candidates. So these are lawyers, business leaders, educators, and political activists. And we've asked them at various points in time, in 2001, in 2011, and most recently in May of 2017, so after Trump was elected, if they'd ever considered running for office, if they thought they were qualified, and if anybody had ever encouraged them to run. And the gender gap in political ambition overall has stayed roughly the same size throughout this 16-year period. And the gender gap in self-assessed qualifications, whether people think they are qualified to throw their hat into the ring and ultimately to govern, has stayed roughly the same size as well.
Wow.
What has changed on the Democratic side of the aisle is this recruitment gap, where this time around, we're seeing Democratic women and men being equally likely to be encouraged to run for office.
So
I think
okay.
that it's not that these inherent patterns of traditional socialization that cause women to doubt their qualifications have fundamentally changed. It's that external sources are tapping female candidates this time who are Democrats and saying, look, you've got to get in there and you've got to do something about it.
You know, I want to bring, this is a great moment to bring Jennifer Carnahan into the conversation. By the way, if you've just tuned in, it's a discussion about how to understand the fact that more women are running for public office, more Democratic women, more Republican women. It's been called in some places the year of the woman. I started the conversation saying, I remember the last one. I was a television reporter. And I don't know, it seems like we hit a ceiling on the number of women that were going to end up being elected to public office. So trying to understand, is this different? Why are women stepping up in both parties? And I'd like to hear if you're a woman in your 20s and beyond, if you're thinking about running for office, maybe you're in the midst of a campaign, what's holding you back? What has held you back from running for public office? And for everyone, does this year feel different? 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828, and on Twitter, at Carrie NPR. I want to bring Jennifer Carnahan in. She's state chair of the Republican Party of Minnesota with us from Minneapolis. Jennifer, thanks so much for the time.
Thank you for having me.
So you heard Jennifer Lawless saying that recruitment is up among Democrats and more, just as many women and men are being recruited. It's equal this time. I want to, does it feel different? Now, I know this is a fairly new position for you. Does it feel different when you go to Republican women to say, this is the moment, it's time to run? Do you hear more interest, more eagerness, and not so much of that, oh, I've got this and that, maybe in 5 or 6 years? How does it sound to you?
Yeah, I would say it's definitely been more positive, and there's been more interest across the board. I mean, as we've been going out, you know, we've got big elections coming up this year in Minnesota, especially, and all over the country. We're seeing a lot of women putting their hands up, whether it's for, you know, races like school board or city council or state legislative seats, all the way up to, you know, congressional races and statewide offices like U.S. Senate and governor. And that's very encouraging to see.
I don't know what you were doing during the last year of the woman. That was 92. Where were you? Do you remember it very well?
I might have been 92. Let's see. I graduated high school in 95, so I might have been in 90.
Okay. All right. So I don't know how many details that you actually remember about that. But, you know, that was a time of a lot of optimism. Things are going to change. Yes, more women got elected. I'm not sure they had as much influence as was predicted at that point. I'll ask Jennifer Lawless about that. Does this moment feel differently to you, Jennifer Carnahan?
You know, I don't remember the early 90s as well, but what I will say is, you know, when I was growing up in the family, that type of family I grew up in, my parents always encouraged me, whatever you put your mind to in this world, if you're willing to go out and work for it and put in the effort, you can achieve anything you want. The sky's the limit. You know, with the exception of becoming president of the United States because I'm adopted. And so that's a culture that I've grown up in my entire life, whether it was in my family, whether it was in the circle of friends or activities I surrounded myself in, and now being the chair of the Republican Party in Minnesota. So I think what's positive is that, you know, we are at a juncture where women are raising their hands. They are running for big races. You know, I did it myself when I ran for chair of this party. Mm-hmm. I had less than a year of political experience. And, you know, I felt like, hey, I have all this great corporate experience and background. And I feel like there's an opportunity to run the party in a different way. And I can bring that strategic perspective. And, you know, everyone told me, you know, you have no chance of winning. You're going up against all these men that have been around the party a lot longer than you have. And, you know, the way I viewed it was, there's no loss coming out of this. Even if I lose the race, I've still learned something.
Wow.
I've met new people, and I've potentially opened future doors down the road. So I think that women are taking more risks in this sense today because they're looking at things from a more optimistic perspective. You know, we've got a great candidate on our side running for a governor in Mary Giuliani Stevens, and she kind of has a similar path as I did. She hasn't been a longtime party activist. She hasn't been in the infrastructure of the party, but she's going for it, and it's kind of the same. Even if she doesn't come out as the candidate for the Republican side, I'm sure for her it's been an incredible experience. She's learned a lot. She's met a lot of new people, and it opens doors for her down the road.
Yeah, Jennifer, I love hearing your story here because I think it goes right back to what Jennifer Lawless and I were saying about that moment of, I'm going to need to pay my dues on the political landscape as well. Jennifer, do you see less It's, you know, everybody gets a turn kind of thing happening this time around.
No. So I don't want to take the wind out of everybody's sails and be Debbie Downer over here, but I do want to highlight two things. The first is that overall, 78% of the candidates running this cycle are men.
Okay.
And when you compare that to 2010 and 2014, those years it was 79.5 and 80%.
Okay.
So the raw numbers are way higher, which indicates that something is motivating more people to run, but it's motivating more men also. Now, these raw numbers mean that there are opportunities for unprecedented gains, but it's important to keep in mind that if women's numbers go up at the same rate that men's numbers are going up, we're still going to have relatively the same amount of numeric underrepresentation. So, you know, I think it's just important to keep that in perspective because these comparisons, especially when we're thinking about whether we break records, it matters how we measure what record we're breaking.
You got it. The percentages. So, Jennifer Carnahan, what are you going to do about that to even the percentages a little more here?
You know, I think it's all about building a bench and encouraging people over time, right? You're not just going to do it in one cycle per se, but it's about, you know, what type of involvement are you building? What type of candidates are you recruiting? Who you're talking to? How are you inspiring and encouraging people to get involved? And, you know, things like that are built over time. So it's just continuing to stay on that path and continuing to encourage people to get involved in the process and to consider running for office at any different level, depending on what's going on in that individual's life and where their interests lie.
Aaron says on Twitter, I'm 33, a farmer, three kids. I've definitely considered running for office, not because I want to, but because no one seemed to be standing up for the issues that I feel are important. I decided to wait until my kids were older. Anyone who wants to be a politician is someone I'm suspicious of. to Amanda in St. Paul. Hey, Amanda. Hi. Thanks so much for waiting.
Hi. Hi, Carrie.
Tell
Thanks
me your story.
Me.
Sure.
Sure. So I am preparing for the event that Erin Murphy, who's our current representative in 64A, gets the gubernatorial endorsement. Mm-hmm. And in the event that that happens, I'm going to be seeking the DFL endorsement for Minnesota House of Representatives in 64A.
And so when you, as I asked some of our other candidates who have called in, when you're knocking on doors and you're talking to would-be voters, what are they bringing up? Are they raising any questions about the fact that you're a woman running for this office, either directly or obliquely?
Yeah, I think actually folks are really inspired. And I've noticed that one thing that's really resonating with people that I'm talking to is the fact that even at the Minnesota legislature, there continues to be underrepresentation of women. And that's something that people are really concerned about, especially when there are important decisions that are being made about our families, our communities, our health. So that's one of the reasons I want to be there. I want to be there not just to help sort of change that balance, but also to amplify the voices of other women.
Good to have the call. Thanks, Amanda. Really appreciate it. Jennifer Carnahan, what do you think about our mid-30s farmer who says, this isn't something that I've long aspired to, but I feel like I have to do it because no one else is standing up? Do you have, you know, potential candidates tell you that is part of the purpose of getting into politics?
Well, absolutely. And that's the reason I personally got involved.
Oh, yeah?
I mean, the reason that I got involved in politics is because I was becoming, frankly, frustrated with the government on both sides of the aisle. And I wanted to have more of a voice than just showing up to vote every November. And I honestly wasn't sure how to make change or how to get involved. But sometimes when you raise your hand because something motivates you individually, it can lead you down a path to being able to do really positive things for our state and our country. And so anyone that expresses interest in that, I would encourage them wholeheartedly, 100%.
Do you feel, Jennifer Carnahan, that given what we're hearing from Jennifer Lawless about how many of these, and this often happens with a midterm election, but how motivated the other party is, you feel like some of the women you're trying to recruit might be swamped by the sheer enthusiasm of Democrats this year?
Oh, I don't think that would be the case at all. I think that there is a lot of energy on both sides. There certainly is in the Republican Party, specifically in Minnesota, with all of the opportunities that we have in the races on the ballot. And so, again, each individual has their own motivation or reason for wanting to run or considering running. Some need to be, some need to be talked to and championed a bit more. Others maybe have the idea in their own mind, but the goal is to continue to foster that dialogue and help people navigate the path and see that it's, you know, not as intimidating as it may appear from the outside. And it's an opportunity to make real positive change.
And again, your story is a testament to that. Jennifer, thank you. Please come back anytime. Really good to have you on the show.
Thank you for having me.
Jennifer Carnahan is state chair of the Republican Party of Minnesota. A little later, we'll hear from Lauren Beecham. She's director of Women Winning. It's a nonprofit committed to electing pro-choice women. Jennifer Lawless continues with us. She's director of the Women in Politics Institute and a professor of government at American University. Jennifer, I was reading a piece in Politico last month by Heather Cagle. And the lead was a little depressing. So listen to this. She writes, women barreled through longstanding barriers on Capitol Hill in 1992, winning elections to the House and Senate in record numbers. And then they were promptly told how to vote by senior male colleagues, ignored in elevators, and even turned away at the chamber doors because staff, quote unquote, weren't allowed on the floor. You think that's a pretty accurate assessment of what happened and perhaps is still happening on Capitol Hill in D.C.?
I have no reason to believe that that's not an accurate assessment of what the landscape looked like in 1993 when these women came to Washington after having been elected the previous November. The good news is that things have changed. Now, there's a ton of work still to be done, but since that time, Nancy Pelosi became Speaker of the House. Louise Slaughter became Chair of the Rules Committee. Those are probably the two most important positions in leadership in the House of Representatives. And we have women on as ranking members among Democrats on key committees in the Senate as well. So, you know, the U.S. Congress is built on the premise of seniority, which means that you've got to stick around for a while before you can have influence and before you can really shape that agenda. So the importance of electing women is vital, not only for that one cycle, but because they then have the credentials and the seniority that they're able to build so that they, too, can become leaders. And we're seeing the fruits of that labor right now. When Tammy Duckworth was able to bring her newborn onto the Senate floor, and there was very little controversy on either side of the aisle from either men or women, it's largely a result of the fact that people have gotten accustomed to women in the chamber. So there's a ton of work to be done. 20% is nowhere close to gender parity or even a critical mass, but I think the political climate looks a lot different now than it did then.
Your point is well taken, although that Tammy Duckworth thing got a lot of press coverage. Because it was so unique, right? I mean, we'll know we've really made progress when that isn't one of the lead news stories for the day, all right?
Absolutely. But the fact that it was not particularly controversial,
right,
I think is an important key step.
Yeah, really good point. To Madeline in Chaska. Hey, Madeline, hi. What's your story?
Hi there. Thanks so much for taking my call. Sure. I am a young woman running for office.
Mm-hmm.
I'm running for the House seat for District 47A, which is Western Carver County, the Southwest Metro.
Okay.
And I'm calling because I wanted to discuss, I hear this question a lot. People ask, why are there so many women running for office? And I think that they expect all of us to have the same reason, and we just absolutely don't have the same reason.
Right.
So I just wanted to share that I feel like the 2016 election cycle was so high energy and made a lot of people very angry. I think it just led a lot of us to look into what can I do to make a difference and how can I even get involved. And that made a lot of us learn about local government in a way that we didn't already understand it. And for me, that was my story. I looked into, okay, I am nowhere near the president. I can't even get involved at that level. How can I get involved? And one of the ways that I saw to get involved was to run for office myself. And I realized what an impact House members have. And that's really what drove me to this position specifically.
So Madeline, you're 30. Is that right?
That's correct. Yeah.
What used to happen, and maybe this is changing, was that women, as I suggested at the beginning, would say, especially of your age, would say, well, you know, just getting started in my career, want to have children, don't think I can do this with two or three young kids in the house. How did that figure into whatever your life situation is? How did that figure into your decision here?
I think this is an important question. And honestly, I think that it takes that's how you know if you're supposed to do it or not. You really have to have kind of an iron belly for those issues, because it's amazing to me how many people, men and women of both political parties, ask me about if I have children, if I'm married, if I plan to have children, and then they want to know what state of my career I'm in. And it feels like they're doing family planning on my behalf. And I honestly feel like that is really ingrained and you can't avoid it. And I'm sure that I've asked women those questions. It's not something that we can necessarily prevent. You just need to know the answers to those questions for yourself, because it can't be the reason you don't do something. And if it is the reason you're not doing something, you maybe didn't want to do that in the first place.
Huh. So Jennifer, what do you think of that?
I agree with that last statement. We have found that the gender gap in political ambition is actually not affected by parental status, marital status, or family roles and responsibilities. Women of all walks of life are less likely to consider running for office, but those who do consider it and those who actually do it are no more or less likely to have certain family arrangements, which suggests that once you decide that it's something that you want to do and you're passionate about it, you figure out a way to make all of these other pieces fall into place. Now, that's not to say that we couldn't have major progress in terms of more affordable childcare or other opportunities that make it easier, because women still do shoulder the majority of the household tasks in childcare. But it does suggest that closing the gender gap in ambition isn't necessarily incumbent on closing that child care gap.
All right. I also want to say, I don't like it when people say, you know, women will bring the women's issues together. No, daycare, affordable daycare is everybody's issue. The gender pay gap is everybody's issue. But I will say this, Jennifer, and I'm interested in your thoughts. Women, this is a personal lived experience in a lot of women's lives, right? Unaffordable daycare, having experienced the gender pay gap. And that's the kind of stuff that we want all of our representatives in Congress or wherever to bring to the job, right? Lived experience, the knowledge about what this is really like to live with. So
we do.
Yeah, go ahead.
I think that's right. And that's an upside to electing not only more women, but more people with diverse backgrounds and experiences.
Yes, right.
If you have a legislature that's only lawyers and business leaders, you're not going to have the same perspectives as if you also have teachers and social workers and nurses and doctors and farmers. So it's not only about gender diversity, it's about a broader set of lived experiences, because people in this country who are represented by our elected officials have far diverse experiences.
Exactly. Colleen says on Twitter, I've thought of running on and off over many years, but then I can't imagine how to begin, organize, garner support, develop a platform, fundraise, and then I lose the energy. She says, mature enough to run for president, but would never desire the job. By the way, Andrew corrected me on Twitter that it is, you have to be 35, not 40, to run for president. Colleen, keep listening here, because I'm going to bring Lauren Beecham into the conversation, and that's a organization that helps do a lot of what you've just described. She's executive director of Women Winning, and it's a nonprofit committed to electing pro-choice women. Lauren, welcome. Good to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me, Carrie.
What do you think when you hear Colleen say, yeah, I've tossed this around, I might like to do it, but there's a whole bunch of other stuff, organizing, support, platforms, fundraising, I wouldn't know how to begin with that. So how do you guys step in on that?
Well, first, I would say to Colleen, she is not alone. And that's where the majority of our conversations, as we're talking to these extremely qualified women who might think about running for office, that's where we start. And that's where an organization like ours comes in. We help you lay it all out. We help you understand how you can fit running for office and then serving. That's just a job interview, right? So once you're elected and you're serving, how do you fit that into your life? And how do you build the team around you so that you're not doing this work alone, that you can have a campaign manager, you can have a campaign plan, you understand how many hours you need to be fundraising and your win number in order to talk to voters and actually win on election day, and you fit that into your existing life so it doesn't feel like you're taking on this whole new obligation, but really you're taking your qualifications and you're running for the next level.
Lauren, what's the good answer that Women Winning has to some of the stuff that's coming up on Twitter and that Jennifer and I talked about, which is, I've got a plan and running for office is out there, but it's not immediate because I've got the kids and the career and all of that. What's your good answer to that?
Well, can I start by saying that, you know, we're seeing record numbers of women running in 2018 and who are coming forward to run this year, but the vast majority of the conversations that we continue to have every day are just that, women who say, I want to run for office in 2 years or in 5 years. And the real answer is that you can never start too early on your campaign. You can start building your network. You can start showing up to your party endorsing process. You can start making friends with individuals in your area, in your community, with your neighbors who can become a part of that campaign team. And you can start developing your profile so that when you do decide to run for office, you're ready to go. You don't need to get everything together, but you've been planning incrementally to prepare for that moment long term. And that's why I think we're going to see such long-term payoffs. And this is what makes this year and the next 5 years different than 1992.
Call here from Heather in St. Paul. Hi, Heather. What's your story? You're at the Capitol right now. Is that right?
I am at the Capitol right now. My name is Heather Edelson. I'm running as a Democrat in Edina.
Uh-huh.
And right now, Erin McQuaid actually is doing a great job doing her sit-in.
Oh, okay. You're up there supporting the sit-in that's going on at the Capitol.
Yes,
okay.
Absolutely.
So you were saying that you've been inspired by seeing other women decide to run. How did that change the calculation for you?
Well, you know, I ran in 2016 for the first time, and I didn't get the nomination.
Okay.
I ran, it was all men in the race. And then when I ran this year in 2018 for the DFL endorsement, it was all women running.
Wow.
So I think, you know, we are seeing women come to the table. We want our voices heard. We do a lot in our communities. And I really think we are ready to take on some of these tough challenges. I've been endorsed by Women Winning, who was Lauren, was just on the radio.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been incredibly helpful for my campaign.
I appreciate the call, Heather, from the Capitol. Thank you.
Thanks.
Jennifer, what about this idea of, how do I put this, kind of the role model, I guess, aspect of this, which is, if she can do it, I can do it. Is there anything to that?
I think so. And I think that's part of the reason that we need more female candidates, because as long as women remain a novelty in politics, people are going to be inclined to hold themselves up to those somewhat novel standards. So, for example, consider Hillary Clinton. A lot of people looked around and thought, oh my gosh, if she couldn't win the nomination in 2008,
yeah,
or if she couldn't win the presidency in 2016, when she was so well connected, when she was able to raise so much money, when she had a campaign infrastructure unprecedented in history, how am I supposed to possibly run for the state legislature or the school board or anything else?
Yeah,
right? And so
all that.
The more women we have running and serving and stepping up, the more normal it seems to other women, and the more likely it is that they'll be able to find somebody that looks a little bit more like them and who has similar resources and who succeeds.
If you've just tuned into the conversation, we're talking about the fact that more women than in a long time are running for public office. We're hearing a lot of enthusiasm on the Democratic side, and Jennifer confirms that. Jennifer Lawless confirms that there is a lot of enthusiasm. But more women on both sides are deciding to run in 2018. So love hearing the calls from the DFLers. I appreciate that. I'd love to hear some Republican women who have decided to get in. What's your thinking on this? Have you rearranged kind of some life plans? Where are you running from? What are your voters talking to you about? So if you're a Republican woman also running for office, give me a call. Get in on the conversation. 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828, and on Twitter at @CarrieMPR. Lauren, can you hang with us for a couple of minutes while I take a call?
Of course.
Okay, good. Here's Trista in St. Paul. Hey, Trista. Hi. Thanks so much for waiting. What's your story?
Yeah, so I am running for local office for Ramsey County Commissioner in St. Paul. But I just wanted to respond to your, you know, why wait? What's taking you so long to get into the race? So the seed for me was planted 10 years ago when another woman said, you should run for this office. You're made for it. And it's taken me 10 years. And part of that is because it's not just preparing my own resume and feeling qualified, but I needed to prepare my entire family. I'm a mom of 5 kids.
Wow.
And so I needed to prepare my family, prepared our financial status, you know, so that I could take time off work, right? Additional child care. It takes a ton of time and energy away from the family. And so to get them all ready on board, and that for basically a year of campaigning, mom's not around a whole lot, right? Because I'm working full time and, you know, and then campaigning nights and weekends and opportunity or having to take time off, which is lost wages. So it takes a lot of that preparation. So it sometimes that time is not like I just woke up today and decided to run, but to kind of foster that seed for a long time. And I'm now at a place in my life that, you know, at least the kids can pour their own milk.
I think it's really important, Trista, what you said about the 10, you said 10 years ago, a woman said, you should really think about this. Why did that end up mattering? I mean,
You know, I think it was, well, first of all, she specifically said county commissioner, and I'll be honest, I had no idea what that meant.
Okay.
Right? Because it's a role that not a lot of people know about. And so I looked into it, and as soon as I did, I'm like, yes, this is the place. And then it's kind of been there in the back of my mind, you know, growing like a seed. But it was really, no one had ever asked me, no one had ever mentioned that particular thing, even though I had been a leader in my life since the beginning, right? And so it really is, first of all, about being asked and planting that seed and then seeing where it goes from there.
Jeez, I'm really glad you called and you heard the story. With five kids, you're going to need all the luck you can get here.
That's right.
So good luck on that. So, Lauren, I hear that and say maybe more women office holders themselves should be recruiting women into the political process. Do they do enough of that?
Well, absolutely. And there's always more room to be done. I think our organization has really noticed a shift in just more influencers, stakeholders, electeds doing the asking. And I think that reflects what Jennifer was saying earlier. We have noticed a complete shift in our recruitment. We used to have to do most of our recruitment across the kitchen table or at a coffee shop, asking a woman to run for office, because on average it takes between 5 and 7 times of asking her to run before she'll
step
up and run. Exactly, I know.
Wow.
And so we would ask early and often and involve as many partners and as many community members to do the same and reinforce that ask. Today, at Women Winning, we can barely keep up with the number of women that are coming to our organization. So, yes, we continue to go out and do that recruitment and identify these women. But more and more, because of this wave and because of this excitement and energy, women are coming to us. And so we get to start these conversations from a place of not just convincing the woman that she should run. She's gotten to that point where she's thinking about it, but it's being able to supply her with the tools and the techniques about how she can actually make this a reality.
Jennifer, what gives with the 5 to 7 times average to be asked before women take them up on the ask?
So I'm not familiar with that statistic. I haven't seen that in my own work. I do know that anecdotally, from the interviews that I've conducted with potential candidates, that there is sometimes a perception gap where a woman might not take seriously the notion that a mayor or another elected official meant it when he or she said, hey, you should run for office. And a man who is, you know, banged on the shoulder and told by a local bartender, hey, you'd be a great mayor, seriously gives it thought, right? So there's a perceptual gap, and that might be contributing to this idea that you need to tell a woman over and over and over again that you mean it. But I do think that what's most important here is this general idea that once it appears on a woman's radar screen, the gender gap closes, not entirely, but significantly in terms of whether she decides to enter a race at a particular time. So planting that seed early is the biggest and most important thing that we can do, because once it's there, it can grow.
Okay.
If it's not there in the first place, if it doesn't appear on a woman's radar screen in the first place, there's no candidacy that it can translate into.
So I want to make sure I understood what you just said. You said once the seed is planted, then the gender gap closes.
A little bit. I mean, not entirely. But the biggest gender gap is, have you ever considered running for office?
Okay.
That's about 16 percentage points. When we look at the people who have considered it, women are still less likely than men to do it. But that gap is smaller than at the consideration phase.
Got it. To the phones to Scott in Minneapolis. Hi, Scott.
Hi, Gary.
Hey, what are you thinking about?
You know, this is a great conversation, and, you know, I'm really excited about the number of women that are stepping up and running for office. I think that there's always this perceived obstacle that women have to choose between family or career.
Right.
And it's an artificial barrier, and as we see more women stepping into these leadership roles and making that choice, that artificial barrier, I think, is starting to break down. And what you're seeing, too, is changes in the process. Like when Tammy Duckworth brought her daughter to the vote. You know, I think that, you know, hopefully what more and more women will start to appreciate is that this doesn't have to be an either or. And then that you know, sort of false choice evaporates as they can see more and more people in those roles performing that work and doing great jobs.
Scott, thanks. Appreciate the call. Lauren, have some of the women that you're talking to about running or making the decision to get in been talking to you about the Me Too movement and what that has meant to their thinking here?
They have. I think there's just such a community of support. It's a confidence builder and bolster for them. If they're thinking about it, they see that there are other women who are empowered and encouraged in all sectors, not just public service, but it's encouraging them to take that leap and start thinking critically about how they can give back to their community, and running for office is one of those ways.
Good to have you on the show, Lauren. Thank you.
Thank you.
Lauren Beacham is the executive director of Women Winning. Jennifer Lawless continues with us. And if you've just gotten in on the end of this conversation, it's about how to understand what's happening as more women come forward and decide to run for public office, what the Trump effect is of that, how Me Too is influencing that. I'm going to ask Jennifer about that in a minute. And some of the other calculations that might have been barriers in the past and how women are thinking about them today. Jennifer, the Me Too movement, can you tell what kind of an influence that's having yet?
I think it's keeping alive a lot of the enthusiasm that happened right after Trump's inauguration. So we saw the day after the inauguration an unprecedented number of women and men take to the streets and protest what they assumed was going to be an administration that was hostile toward women's rights and women's equality. And because of the Me Too movement and because of sustained attention on gender discrimination and sexual harassment and sexual assault in so many different industries and realms, we've kept, I think, a focus on what those women marched in D.C. about right after the inauguration. And that's somewhat unique. So a lot of the time we have short attention spans, and Me Too has encouraged women and men to remember that these are fundamental issues that can't just die once a media cycle dies down.
Yeah. Hennepin County Commissioner and former State Senator Linda Higgins is tweeting in. She says, I said I would never run for office right up until the time I decided to run for office. I love that all these young candidates are running. Their worldview needs to be heard in city, county, legislative, and federal legislative bodies. Linda, I'm glad you're listening today. An interesting take here in Politico, Lauren, or Jennifer, from Janet Mills, who's running for governor in Maine. She said, there are a lot of men who give lip service to women's issues because they want the so-called women's vote. When the most qualified person for the job happens to be a woman, you don't see the men standing to the side and saying, oh, yeah, she should have it. What's she really saying there to you?
I mean, I don't want to put words in her mouth. I mean, I don't really view it that way. So I think there's a lot of evidence to suggest that once they're elected, men who support women's issues, especially on the Democratic side of the aisle, can be very effective, outspoken advocates for their female constituents. Mm-hmm. And we have actually seen in Congress virtually no differences in votes that are cast by women and men within the same party, which suggests that when the Democrats put up a bill that has to do with sexual harassment or child care or health care or any of these issues that have traditionally been defined as women's issues, men vote the same way as women do. So in terms of just sort of flat-out representation on those issues, I'm not sure that there's that much to be said about being a man or a woman. But in terms of being especially qualified to bring your life experiences to those discussions and debates, and in terms of being able to set the policy agenda and make sure that those issues are priorities, I think she's right. And I'm not sure that men are willing to step aside and say, look, I actually am not the most credible voice on this.
Aha, uh-huh. Yeah.
But
yeah,
they are single-minded seekers of election as well. So, I mean, would we expect a woman to step aside and say, oh, well, I think he's a better qualified candidate? We would hope not.
So it's a tricky kind of line to navigate, I think.
Yeah, I think you've touched on what I took away from that was let's all be committed to the idea that the most diverse legislative body, wherever it is the best representative, right, of who we are as Americans today. And I think she was saying we're still not to the point where we see enough men saying, I'm committed enough to see more women being elected to public office, and they're bringing a perspective that I can't necessarily bring. And so maybe this is the race that I don't run in. You're right. That demands a lot.
and it's that something that we would realistic. Never ask a woman to do.
Yes, but we don't have to ask a woman
to
do it.
What we wish for.
Well, we don't have to ask a woman to do it because we're in such an uneven landscape right now. We still wouldn't. You're right. Even if it was 50-50. You're
yeah.
right. Okay. Call here from Kristen in Maple Grove. Hey, Kristen, thanks so much for waiting. Tell me your story. You're a candidate. Is that right?
Yes. Thank you, Carrie. Thanks for having me.
Sure.
I think I'm a little bit of a unique case to some of the callers in that I kind of felt like I always had in the back of my mind that I wanted to serve. Mm. And I came from a family who did a lot of volunteer work and very salt of the earth and that kind of thing. But, you know, working in the technology field, which is, you know, very male dominated and so I'm not intimidated by that. But but I never envisioned the case in which I would actually run until someone asked.
How did that go? Tell me how that went, Kristen. Who asked and what happened?
Yeah, so I was actually at a fundraiser for another candidate, and this woman and I were chatting about what a good candidate would look like up in my district. Because it's very blended. Traditionally, it's been more conservative, but it's now very blended and almost evenly. And so we're just talking about it, and instead of really answering my question, she grilled me for a few minutes, and finally she stopped and she said, "Let me get this straight. You are intelligent. You are articulate. You are passionate. Why don't you run?"
And I just
looked at her like, "Oh, what, me?" And, you know, like I'm trying to think, is there somebody standing behind me? And she's like, "No, I'm serious." And she said, "I'm serious. I really think you should do it." And that was really all it took. And the next thing I know, I had an appointment with Melissa Hortman to have coffee and talk about running for office.
Wow.
You know. You know, you're on your way home thinking, oh, my gosh, what just happened?
Kristen, this is great because you've reinforced. I mean, I have to say, Jennifer, my main takeaway from this is the power of the ask from somebody who's already doing it or someone who's influential. I had no idea how essential that was.
That's exactly right. And that, I think, is the most encouraging news that we can put forward because
Agreed.
It means that in the short run, we can elect many, many more women by encouraging them to run, even if we don't solve the bigger problem of where does this gender gap come from in the first place, because recruitment can mitigate it. And the other piece of really good news is that these asks don't only have to come from elected officials. Our evidence suggests that when family members, friends, and colleagues nudge you to consider a candidacy, you're just as receptive. So it's something that every listener, it's something that every woman, every man can do. When they see a woman that they think would make a good candidate for any level of office, talking about it and encouraging them to do it can really go a long way.
Super important of what you just said, that you don't have to be the person serving in the office, right? This is somebody that you look around in your community and say, this really matters. You'd be great at this. That's
exactly.
That's as powerful as even if you're serving in the office.
It is.
Wow. Jennifer, great to talk to you again. I really appreciate the hour and the insight. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Jennifer Lawless is director of the Women in Politics Institute at American University. Now, you might have just be heading out on lunch and you heard the last 15 minutes of the show and you're thinking, how do I listen to the rest of it? Good news, it's on the podcast. Check it out at your time and your leisure.
This was a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. To add your voice to our discussion, you can call in at 800-242-2828 or tweet Carrie at KERRI NPR. And if you miss us live, you'll find all of our shows by subscribing to this podcast. If you have questions, you can email us at talk@npr.org.